some most recent research references that Black women are the most educated cohort in America, but have not been able to amass wealth.
Welcome to Season 5 of the Women on the Move podcast. I'm your host, Sam Saperstein. In this season, we're giving our financial health a checkup with some phenomenal women giving us the prescription for financial wellness. We'll speak to experts on how to educate your children about money, how to address debt, and how to save for home ownership. It's a masterclass on understanding and managing your money.
Lorinda Rainey is the Managing Director of Travel and Affinity Credit Cards at Chase and an ambassador for Chase's Currency Conversation Program. She joins me today to discuss the importance of having long-term savings goals and making the right financial resolutions for your life stage. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Lorinda, thank you so much for joining us on the Women on the Move podcast. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Would love to start talking with you about setting financial goals. Why do you think women should make financial goals a priority among all the other goals that they have?
Women tend to be the primary caregiver in their household, even if the husband or their partner is the primary breadwinner. And so when you think about other factors for women of being the primary caretaker means that they might take time off for having children, for raising children, to actually take care of their parents if they're a caregiver to an older parent or an older sibling. And that time that they are out of the workforce compounds the wage gap that already exists in our country and in our world. And so women tend to also live longer. And so it's really, really important that women think ahead to their 70, 80, 90 year old selves and are able to make sure that they have enough money for the life that they want to live, because they spend so much of their life constantly giving to others, they will often put themselves last. And too often there are older women who are then in difficult situations because they didn't plan ahead.
So it seems like many of us will go through very typical things, retirement, living hopefully to old age, and having medical care and expense needs. So as you're thinking about your financial goals, you know, do you think it has to be so radical and so different, or can women really just focus on these very important basics?
I think that women can think broadly about similar things that men also think about, such as healthcare, retirement planning, of what is the budget that they want to have once they're no longer working and how they want to live off of that, given whatever their life expectancy is. But I do think that women should also take into consideration the fact that they are also caregivers at times. So who are the others that they will want to continue to provide support to as they continue to age?
So I understand that you've worked towards several big financial goals in your own life, including being debt-free. And so I'm wondering if you can share with listeners, how did you do that? How did you start on that goal and pursue it?
For me, I had basic debts that you would think about, a home, a little bit of credit card debt from traveling, auto, and things like that. And I had actually started to accept that some of these things were good debt, if you will, that I would just live with over time. And I wasn't prioritizing paying off my debt. And then I took a financial planning course, and I was thinking about long-term building a philanthropic foundation and other things. And as a part of that, we discussed two terms that people often hear about, which is either the avalanche or the snowball budgeting method. And so if you think of an avalanche, you think of like something that's massive falling down. And so if you think about rank ordering all of your debts, and if you pay off whatever has the largest interest rate first, and you know how much in your budget you're allocating to paying off your debt, once that debt is eliminated, you then apply that to the next debt in priority order. And so it's the avalanche because you're creating this massive amount of savings in your net worth because you're paying off debts in a way that is going to save you money and saving you interest over time. And you can apply that to the next debt and work your way out. What worked for me actually, though, was the snowball method. So if you think of rolling up a snowball to throwing it at someone. So building the snowball is rank ordering by the smallest amount of debt that you have to pay. And so for me, that worked because I like the kind of the adrenaline rush of quick wins. And so paying off one debt, I could then apply that to the minimum payment I was making on that debt to the next debt that I had. And then you start to build momentum because you're growing in how much you're paying on each debt again and again. And I also found what was encouraging was I took this class with my nephew and his wife. They had just gotten married. And so it was great accountability talking through what our long-term goals were versus this immediate trip that we wanted to take or something else. So thinking about the trade-offs of instant gratification and the long-term benefits of being debt-free and the freedom that that would allow for other planning for like children's education and other things that were priorities to us is what made it really easy to stick with the plan as I was working through that.
So I love the fact that number one, you had buddies, two buddies going through this with you, holding you accountable and them, but then you also found this great framework that really worked for you, this notion of the avalanche versus the snowball and that different people might find a different approach depending on where they are and what resonates. So thank you for sharing that. I think both of those things are very powerful and hopefully people can really relate to that. I also wanted to ask you, you know, about your medical experiences. You shared some of these experiences publicly, the fact that you are a cancer survivor, have also battled lupus and infertility. I mean, each of these things are enormous and together, you know, can really be a just big stressor, obviously. How did you navigate the financial implications of having to deal with each of these things?
I would say first and foremost, the average person probably underestimates the importance of insurance. And so what was a great foundation for me was that I was aware of my family's medical health risk. I'm from a very large family, but I've taken the time to understand that. And that made me want to enroll in catastrophic medical care plans. And I actually had a cancer insurance policy. I've lost both of my parents to cancer. And so I sought these precautions that some might have said when I was in my 20s that I was wasting money on these insurance plans that might never come into fruition of paying a claim to me. And so with each of these instances, as they've occurred, I, one, had the insurance plan in place that gave me resources to help me navigate. Then as I was going through that, for my cancer recovery, I actually ended up having to stay in a separate state from my home for 6 months. So I was paying my mortgage in one location. I moved into a temporary apartment in another location. And I had 6 month emergency fund that enabled me to not have to contemplate what are the financial implications of me doing what the doctors are advising me to do right now. I knew that I had the funds to do whatever they were asking me to do, and I could just focus on my mental and emotional and physical health, which were really important. And then coming out of that on the other side, I've worked to rebuild that emergency fund, but emergency funds are for emergencies. Like given what we're going through right now, a lot of people may sometimes feel guilt. And I remember in the first month or so, I didn't want to touch my 6 month emergency fund. And I had to get through that emotional barrier of this is why I created the savings. So that in a time like this, when I'm in an emergency, I don't have to keep worrying about is there enough revenue continuing to come in. I can actually cover all of the expenses that I have right now. And so I think understanding insurance, truly having an emergency fund so that when emergencies arise, tapping into them. But thirdly, actually giving yourself the permission to use those funds when the time comes, I'd say is the third key piece that helped me.
That's remarkable that you did that preemptively, you know, that you took out the right insurance, just knowing your family history. And really, we're so prepared. And obviously, we're so happy to hear that these things are behind you health-wise and that you're back on track in that sense. But it's a really important, I think, reminder to people just to think about those resources that could be available to them and to, unfortunately, confront what could happen to you right in this situation.
I would also say, like in the beginning, we were talking about why women should think about their long-term retirement planning. Understanding your health needs is a major component of thinking about your retirement plan. My doctors often complimented me on the fact that knowing my medical risk, I then actually pursued to know even more information about myself. I talk about my body like it's the magic school bus. Science was never my favorite subject when I was a kid, but actually going through the process, like I've overcome cancer, but lupus is something that I'll live with for the rest of my life. And it's a condition that is not researched nearly as much as cancer. And so I spend a lot of time with my medical team talking through what are options, what are resources, and I think diligently staying informed about whatever medical conditions we have so that we can understand how to navigate that as we age is really important.
Mm. And again, the fact that you're dealing with it from a medical front, but also a financial front, and feel like you're in front of it and are prepared for it, I think is so great. And hopefully that takes the burden off and the stress off the physical side.
Definitely does.
So what financial goals are you setting for yourself now in the beginning days of 2021?
So I've actually only lived in Philadelphia for a little more than 2 years now. So I've been renting and I'm thinking about where I want to purchase my next home. So I've been looking at that and also looking at investment properties. So those are two big, exciting purchases that I'll plan to make in 2021. And then I've also been on the quarantine weight loss plan throughout 2020. So
I don't think I've heard of that one.
I know where a lot of people are like, I go to the refrigerator so many more times throughout the day because I always have access to it. But I've actually, in my day job, when we're not in quarantine, I travel significantly. So that means I'm eating a lot of food in restaurants or on airplanes, and I'm not always in control of my diet or my schedule. So I've taken the benefit of while I've been in quarantine, I actually work out with a trainer by FaceTime and have really dived into like fitness community online. And I think just a sense of community, obviously personality-wise, keeps me motivated and keeps me going. And so that's helped me lose over 20 pounds this year. So the other big purchase that I'm planning is to refresh my wardrobe.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thanks.
What an accomplishment, especially now, really at any time. So you'd serve that wardrobe. I love that. So let's talk about some other things you're involved with. You're an ambassador for Currency Conversations. So that's an initiative that we started at Chase. We partner with Essence as well on this. And it's really designed to help Black women get financially fit.
Yes. So research has proven that Black women bear the brunt of twofold, the gender pay gap and the racial wealth gap. So Black women make 61 cents on the dollar compared to white men. And then Black families tend to have 10 cents in assets compared to every dollar in white families. And what most recent research in 2014 references that Black women are the most educated cohort in America, but have not been able to amass wealth. And that's multiply driven by the wage gap when they do graduate from their academic programs, the student loan debt that they may carry from pursuing those degrees. And then Black women are known from this research as constantly being the source of support to their loved ones and to their friends. And so if they are building wealth, there's this constant line of people that they're continuing to help in their community. And so they're not growing their own wealth as they're helping others meet their financial needs. It almost feels like an obligation of sorts. So when Currency Conversations launched, I really started to reflect of that my experience in that financial planning class that I mentioned previously. I was doing that actually through a church that I was attending at the time, but it made me reflect on how going through that class environment made me much more transparent about talking about my salary, my wealth, what is my long-term plan for retirement, when do I want to retire, and how long do I expect to live, and what's the lifestyle, am I planning to travel? Like thinking through all of those decisions and having conversations with others helped me realize where I was similar to others and where I was different. And so Currency Conversations opened my mind to let me get a couple of my friends together and let's talk about money. And I started with a group of eight women knowing that they didn't all know each other, but knowing that they would all be able to learn different things from one another. So I started planning sessions to drive exposure. Some people had never met a financial planner before. I have friends who are financial planners. So I had them come and talk about the services they provide.
Yeah.
I have friends who are entrepreneurs that are in the financial services space. Some of them are real estate investors. And so they came to talk about, if you're going to get into real estate investing, these are some of the core tenets that you need to have in place so that you can do this successfully. And then some people are thinking about starting their own small business. And so I actually had some friends who had started a business come and talk about what it was like for them to get going in their small business, writing a business plan, talking to a bank about securing a loan, or talking to investors to secure investment strategies. And so we get together and have productive conversation, and then we just have a great supportive connection with one another. And some of these are women who I didn't even know in August of 2019 when this all started.
Have there been any aha moments where people discovered something about themselves or something that they should be doing differently with their finances?
Yes. I'd say in the early days, probably around the fourth or fifth month, when we were finishing the prepared materials and trying to figure out what would be helpful to do next, we created a survey. And so right around that time, the New York Times had published this survey that you could go in and like answer a few questions and it would tell you what percentage you are of wealth in the US. So you could filter it down by your age, your level of education, what geographical part of the country you live in. So we made a Survey Monkey survey of like not asking people like exactly how much you make, but put your percentage of wealth or income from this New York Times survey in. Let's talk about benefits that we all have so that we can think about salary negotiation advice. So we talked about different elements of your compensation package. Mm-hmm. And with this broad survey, I think the first big aha moment was for some women, it was realizing that they are amongst the top 5% or 10% of income in our nation. So that was a great sense of accomplishment for some people that they didn't have before. But the other thing was for other people realizing that these are other benefits that I actually could negotiate for. This was just the realization of there's additional elements for compensation packages that exist. And I'd say the third aha moment was like the conversation about debt. Several people saying like, I actually should get rid of these student loans, or I was saving up for a new car, I should keep this car that's working until I pay off this and this and this debt. And so I think a broad perspective opener for everyone in the group was that you can always figure out how to use a model that fits your needs and fits your lifestyle and fits your life stage. And you can then make that work for whatever your financial goals are going forward.
You're really describing such a great experience, it sounds like, that everyone's benefiting from it. So let's also talk about building credit.
I honestly think people underestimate small habits. People think, for instance, it's okay for them to miss a payment. Well, you really shouldn't be 30 days or 60 days or 90 days late. That actually has a significant impact on your credit score. Or also people may think, I really like my credit card with company XYZ. And so they always pay that credit card off, but they have another credit card that they max out on a regular basis. And so one, if you're maxing out a credit card, that actually means you're probably living beyond your means or living beyond what your budget should allow. And that's not a comfortable place to be. And that actually will create financial stress. And there's no like one size fits all way to get a perfect FICO score. But ultimately, it's these little small habits, paying your bills on time, not becoming too dependent on one piece, and being aware of your FICO score. Chase actually provides a great free resource, and you don't even have to have a Chase account through Credit Journey. So if you go to chase.com, Credit Journey, you can monitor your credit FICO score, and you can actually see what are the things that could simulate and make it go up or go down.
So that's a great reminder. And especially, you know, for women as they're experiencing different life stages out there, whether that's college and the debt they carry there, home ownership, thinking about that, marriage, starting a family, unfortunately going through a divorce. You know, what do you think for women particularly they should be thinking about when it comes to planning for those milestones as best you can and trying to think about how you use financing and credit to help get through them?
I think understanding financial wellness is really important, but it's also like practicing it. So you mentioned that many women will be impacted by their life decisions, whether it's, do I take out a student loan? Am I a co-signer on a loan with someone else? I think all of these are things that someone should start to understand when they're in college. And if they can, have someone that can teach it to your children before they graduate high school, and then have them put it into practice. So putting it into practice is what's really important, thinking about the habit of investing. If so many people would actually start investing as soon as they graduate from high school or graduate from college, the beauty of compound interest, it would help them with their long-term goals so much more than just waiting. And most of us will think through, I want to wait to invest in my 401k, or I want to wait to invest in the 529b for my child's education until after I've bought this house, or after I've paid for this wedding, or after. And when you keep saying after, you're waiting until you're 45 to start saving for something. And then you don't have the benefit of compounded interest. Whereas even if you started at 25 and stopped at 35 and the money continued to grow with the stock market or with the interest in a savings account, it would have a much bigger impact towards helping you be successfully set up for the future and seeing your account grow in an exponential way versus just like in small incremental troughs. So starting to invest as early as possible, starting to save as early as possible, saving and investing go hand in hand, but also monitoring their FICO scores, because that is an indicator of if they ever do need to borrow, which would happen when you buy a home, buy a car, you need to have a very high credit score. I think that some people have caught this wave following the financial crisis several years ago, where they've kind of sworn off credit cards. Well, if you never borrow, then you don't have a FICO score. So if you never borrow, you're just as questionable to a banking institution when you come to apply for a car or a home as someone who has borrowed poorly. And so you need to demonstrate good behavior as early as you can.
Yeah, it's important to establish that credit history.
Yeah.
As early as you can. You talked earlier about, you know, having the financial goals so you can do things with your resources, like support philanthropic endeavors. It clearly is important to you. Your family has a foundation, Rainy Parenting, and your mission is to provide exposure, encouragement, and resources to families to narrow income and academic gaps. That is a terrific mission, and I would love for you to tell us more about the work of the foundation.
Yes. So I've mentioned I'm from a large family. My parents were married 50 years, and through their 50 years together, they had 16 children.
And God bless them. I think that is the largest family I've just about ever heard of someone having personally that I've known. Great. Wow.
Yes. And all single births. My mother was an angel. I don't think I ever heard her raise her voice. But in addition to them raising the 16 of us, 11 of us have college degrees, 6 of us have master's degrees, 3 have PhDs. My parents were born in the 30s, and so they didn't go to college. But my dad ended up starting a small business. My mother never worked outside of the home, but she did taxes in the community. She was essentially the CFO or accountant for my dad's business. And my dad was a deacon at a church for over 40 years. And I talk a little bit about who my parents were, because the reason why we started Rainy Parenting Foundation was to embody these elements of giving back. They valued education. Both of my parents went to school at a time when it was segregated and multiple grades would be clustered together. And so they both skipped grades. So they were both really intelligent, and they passed that on to us of education is the gateway to the world. And I think with the 11 of us who have degrees who've gone on to do different things, they really trained that within us. And then there were so many aspects of family values that they passed on as well, not only in how they raised us as a close-knit family, but through their leadership at the church and what they did with the young people. And we also were really involved with 4-H, which is what I call Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts in the country. So I grew up on a farm. And with 4-H, my mother actually was kind of the mother hen to all of the kids in 4-H. So describing who my parents were is a bit of what we now try to pass on to others. So we try to invest and donate to organizations that are supporting foster families or foster children so that they can create a safe and supportive and secure foundation for those children to grow up. Because if you can help a child understand how to expand their thinking and see that there's more than what meets the eye before them, you really can fuel a lot of innovation and creativity. And so we wanted to pass that on to other families of what our parents gave to us. For several years, when I used to live in Arkansas, we actually would do a college fair. So we would bring all college representatives from all across the state of Arkansas to this little town where we grew up and open it up. And several of my siblings were student athletes. And so we would mix fun of basketball connected to this college fair of learn about your options and what are the requirements to go to college so we could expand the horizon of where people might think about going in the future. And so those are two big ways that we try to give back, but it really is about embodying the fabric of what our parents taught to all of us.
Yeah. That is incredible. Your parents really left such a wonderful legacy in you and your siblings. I mean, this work is amazing. You just radiate such warmth and kind of values that they taught to you. So it's really nice to see you passing that along. Thank you so much for being with us today on this podcast. It's been great to talk with you about your financial journey, how you're helping others with their journeys, and just hearing about the wonderful values instilled in you by your family. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. This has been such a fun conversation.
I love my conversation with Lorinda. You can tell she's so passionate about financial wellness and education. And there were great takeaways from our conversation, like how to balance long-term financial planning with instant gratification and some of the aha moments that can come from talking with others about money. I hope you found it as enlightening as I did. The mission of Women on the Move is to help women in their professional and personal lives. Our goal is to introduce you to people with great ideas, inspiring stories, and a passion to make a difference. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss any others. For JPMorgan Chase's Women on the Move, I'm Sam Saperstein. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. is a member of the FDIC.